Well, you're listening to Ravelength, Wavelength from Raven Row with Nico de Oliveira. I still don't know what to call you. Do I call you the director of the Museum of Installation or governor?
I go by many names. I'm generally a curator.
Curator
and director.
But you and your partner run the Museum of Installation as it exists in Deptford.
The main activity nowadays is running SE8 Gallery, which is essentially building upon some of the ideas and, of course, refuting some of the ideas of Museum of Installation, which nowadays, of course, exists in archival form rather than in active project-based form. So that's what's been happening of late.
So the gallery is now called SE8?
SE8 Gallery, yes.
Okay. All right, well, that brings it... Well, that last track was from The Sound of Smell by Osvaldo Macia, and that was the sound of pine needles being blended.
Ground
in blenders. All right. Well, that brings us to your one of this project called The Half-Shut Door, Artist Soundtracks, and this is your present sort of... project or latest project. And can you tell me something about this? When did it run? How did it manifest itself? Was it an exhibition or what?
It took place 3-4 months ago at our space in Deptford, SE8. And the show initially was conceived as a series of ideas around the notion of sound art. As the research went on, we became more and more interested in the idea of actual soundtracks that in this instance were specifically taken from existing video works that the public might know because the artists in the exhibition, Stefan Brueggemann, Dryden Goodwin, João Onofre, and Hans Op de Beeck, so Belgium, Portugal, Mexico, and Britain. They're quite well known, so the likelihood is that you might have seen this particular piece of work somewhere in the world before. We collaborated with the artists, asking them to exhibit only the soundtracks. And these are soundtracks which were specially written to go with these video pieces. To help us with that, we worked with a Portuguese composer, a sound engineer, and that was extremely useful. And the entire space was clad in black felt, therefore making a pretty good sonar space. We bought probably the best vintage kit that we could buy. For the money, for the very modest budget, in fact, as it turned out. Mm-hmm. And that was the only visible thing in the space. Of course, the space was pitch black.
When you say vintage kit, why? Why did you choose vintage kit?
We listened to quite a lot of contemporary stuff. And within the budget, there's an amazing shop in Hastings called Steve's Hi-Fi. And he has the most wonderful, often very, very esoteric kit sitting in there. And people are forever wandering in and out and listening to various things. And he will tell you, as if you were the greatest professional, every single bit about the pieces, who's built them, what kind of frequencies they operate on, and so on and so forth, which, of course, goes entirely over one's head, but it's actually a real kind of sonar experience to go into there. So we thought, interesting, because his shop is actually a very similar size to our gallery. And we thought, within the budget, to work with a piece of vintage kit, which is an old NAD system, could basically run an entire party, a house party, but instead, it's playing these, I think, rather fantastic soundtracks.
Right. So is this like valve amplifiers and that sort of thing? Or
no valve. No valve, because Steve always says if you use valve, you end up on fire. I always listen to the experts. I'm a good boy.
Because I always used to, well, I still have a quad system with 1950 corner speakers. Mm-hmm. I used to have quad valve amplifiers with it. but they ended up sort of making a kind of humming noise, which it just became too troublesome. I mean, they looked beautiful, especially if you turn the lights down, you just see the valves glowing.
Absolutely.
So I eventually traded them in for quad transistor amplifiers. So I still have the sort of quad system, but a lot of people are critical of it. They say that the sound, it sounds as though treacle has been poured over it, as though it's got a kind of sort of muted, not as sharp or something. But you sort of get used to it, don't you? But
I mean, one of the things that we were particularly keen on, and hence the kit, was that we felt that there was a difference between sound being played, because we all understand that on the radio, you know, on one system, at home, I think that's sound being played, and I think that's fine, that's good. But we felt that this sound somehow needed to be performed.
Right.
And literally, if you're sitting people in a space, then they expect a performance. And I can't even explain it technically, because I'm sure sound engineers have spent many years thinking about these things. But there is a difference between the performance of sound and the simple hearing of sound. There's something active, and somehow the system makes the soundtracks active in the space, as opposed to just passive listening experiences.
Right, right.
They are in the room, they fill the room, there's a physicality to the sound, hence the kind of quality that we were looking for.
Right, right.
But of course, if Andrew came along, he would probably say, oh, no, this is not how you do it. I can think of something much, much better. But that's...
Well, he used to... I remember he had a valve equipment, Beard, it was called. And I think he actually got to know Mr. Beard, who sort of came and installed it for him. It's something like this. It's,
always very, very instructive and deeply humbling.
All right. So in this show, you talk about Bernard Herrmann's score for Vertigo, and Douglas Gordon and so on, and also some reference to Rachmaninoff's The Isle of the Dead. But these are not these have nothing to do with the actual artworks that were on the show. This is the
no. I think that the writing focuses on thinking about the context within which something like this can be seen and understood, and it mines some of the background. The works themselves are extremely different, and they range all the way from catchy pop tunes. Obviously, they're not just that, perhaps, as we shall hear in a little while, because they're slightly more complex than that, but certainly they give the appearance of it, all the way to pretty sort of orchestral scores, and then all the way back down to minimalism and clicks and beeps.
Yeah.
And it just depends on what it is.
I'm just reaching for the... It's issued on vinyl. Again, some people don't really understand why things continue. I mean, I buy vinyl, and my partner and I have just done something on vinyl. Why did you choose vinyl rather than CD for this?
I think very simply because vinyl is an object. It objectifies what is on it. Yes, it does have a kind of vintage and perhaps even retro aspect to it. All of that, I think, is good and proper fetishism on the one hand.
Right.
But I also think that the more you withdraw the visual from an exhibition itself, the more interesting it becomes to return it as a kind of faux object afterwards. And vinyl, of course, is exactly that. I mean, the thing to be said about vinyl, I guess, is that with vinyl, there's a lost generation, meaning that people of a certain age, maybe above 40, have had a long track record of vinyl.
Yeah.
And people who are in their late teens and early 20s, the funky kids, they're all listening to vinyl, and they have their prized little vinyl collections of really rare grooves and editions and what have you. It's the people in between who go, where's your CD or where's your download?
Yeah. Well, we'll play one track off this. We might play some more later. So this is off the Half Shut Door Artist Soundtracks. And this is a 1:58 extract. Can you just tell me a little bit about this? Because
What it is, they're the original statements from Sol LeWitt from the 60s, sung by the artist John Baldessari in the 1970s, and now re-edited by the artist João Onofre from Portugal to the tune of Madonna's Like a Virgin.
Right, okay. I can't imagine it. Here we go. I'll try and... Curious piece. Recap, what's that? Is this the words of Sol LeWitt, re-edited by John Baldessari and sung?
Sung by John Baldessari. Oh. Sung.
Uh-huh.
And re-sung again.
Oh, re-sung. So did Baldessari issue it as a record then? What did he do?
Baldessari sung it, and there is a recording of it, yes.
Right, but presumably not to a pop soundtrack.
To be quite honest, I don't know.
Okay. That's all right. Of course, I mean, there is sort of a tradition of artist records, of course. I mean, Art and Language did quite a few sort of political... And they worked with the Red Crayola, didn't they? Sort of doing sort of political songs with... most of which were probably quite... Well, totally obscure, really. They wouldn't find their way out of the gallery, I don't think. So where should we go? What's the... tell me a bit more about this exhibition, Nico, the half-shut door.
Okay.
Did you give a... You gave a talk somewhere?
Yes, various things. I mean, we were recently at a conference at Royal College where
right.
we presented, in fact, the soundtrack of Hans op de Beek, which perhaps we might listen
yeah.
to a little bit later,
yeah.
which goes with his... It's a half-hour soundtrack, which covers his half-hour CGI with actors film that is currently on tour in Europe. I think it's in Switzerland at the moment, and next it's going to Sevilla, which is one of his... It's a chef d'oeuvre, really. It's an enormous piece of work, which has cost enormous amounts of money, and it's part of a large tour, as I said. And it deals with this idea of an ocean liner. An ocean liner, it's kind of futuristic. It doesn't have a particular location. And it's what happens on this ocean liner. The film is wordless and is accompanied by said soundtrack.
Okay, so this is by Hans Op de Beek.
Yep.
We can leave this running in the background a bit. So it's basically a soundtrack for a film where the images have been removed. Or
exactly.
Right.
And the thesis of the exhibition that we had in mind was essentially that we were interested in what happens when the visual is entirely cut off. And this was confirmed by visitors to the exhibition later on, who actually became deeply immersed and were actually creating images of mm-hmm. their own,
right.
of the exhibition. The majority of the visitors hadn't necessarily seen the pieces before, which we hadn't exactly gambled on, but instead we found that people were actually very, very happy to be without images. But it was important that they knew that there were images and that there was something missing. So the auditory attempted to fill the space of the visual, which is exactly right. what actually happened throughout right. the show.
I did a program a few weeks ago of there were about four different tracks of music for films, but the film had never been made, as it were. There's a Ruttmann's Weekend, which was broadcast on the radio, and it was called it's called Weekend, but the idea was it was literally an audio poem for a film about Berlin, but the film doesn't exist. And I finished up with there's a Jack Bruce track called Theme for an Imaginary Western, which again is sort of so the whole program were these soundtracks without images. But in this case, the images did exist, the films existed, but they've been sort of excised or removed from the experience.
I think that the removal was actually quite important, because if you remove something, clearly you're making it more present if you make it clear to listeners or viewers that something is missing. So you're actually underlining the missing element, the loss of something. And I think psychologically it kind of preys on the viewer's mind, because they're expecting to see something, there is nothing to be seen, but the sound then takes the place of vision. And I think, moreover, it actually allows you to make a separate space which is sonar, but at the same time it's entirely filled with images. And it's quite remarkable what people actually saw.
Right.
Because, of course, you might say that some of the soundtracks, particularly the ship soundtrack that we were just listening to, is more descriptive, whereas some of the more abstract pieces of Stefan Brueggemann, for example, there is no knowing what there is, and still the human mind actually makes a connection to some kind of image. Of course, thinking about it, sound, of course, is also durational, so there is an ambling, there's a meander implied in this, and it's these kind of mental walks that the audience goes on.
Right.
That I think is particularly interesting in this.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to finish up with something else. What is it, Nico?
It's Marit Folstad, and it's a soundtrack for her her solo exhibition at the Kunstnerhus in Oslo. I think it's 2008 or 2009.
Right.
And she's an artist who always works with a particular DJ. This is Rune Lindbeck. And you should just listen to it.
Yeah.
And enjoy.
Is this a CDR? This is not issued in any way? You can't buy this?
No, you can't. No. It only goes with the show.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much to Nico de Oliveira for coming in. You've been listening to Ravelength on Resonance 104.4 FM.